This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. We got a big show lined up for you. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. What's going on, dude?
What's up, man? I was just chatting with my brother-in-law about... my brother-in-law's father. I don't know what that makes him. It's kind of like my first cousin father-in-law.
Father-in-law-in-law? I don't know. Yeah, it's a layer removed.
He played with John Thompson in high school, and my brother-in-law's father, George Leftwich, was the D.C. Player of the Year 2 years in high school. At one point, they went when they had John Thompson on the team. They went 55-0.
Wow.
they were considered one. I knew some of this history, but I never had it all fleshed out for me. And then he was lifelong friends with John Thompson. But I went down a rabbit hole on my brother-in-law's father this morning because we're interviewing Mike Tomlin, who played football at Georgetown in the last couple years of John Thompson's career there. So I might, if that comes up, I might ask him just about if you ever met John Thompson, because obviously a fascinating individual.
Yeah, no, big time fascinating. Wow, 55-0. They never tasted their own blood, huh? 55-0.
They had it easy back in those days. That's what I always say. Those guys didn't know how tough it could be the way it is now in basketball.
Right, right. Yeah. They don't have good hoops in D.C.
They had John Thompson and Tom Hoover, who was a guy that got drafted in the first round. And at one point played for the Houston Mavericks in his career, but they had like a Twin Towers in high school, and just, it sounds like they were just indestructible.
And your brother-in-law's old man was the player of the year on a team with John Thompson and some
twice.
Dude who got picked in the first round.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta meet this guy.
He's an awesome old guy.
I'll bet.
He's really awesome. I just say, yeah, we had Thanksgiving with him this year, and he's just he ended up coaching for like 50 years, and he's doing really well.
And he's got great stories, man. I'm looking forward to our conversation with Mike Tomlin today. That'll be fun. We got a lot to get to with the new Texans
president. Is it definitely Tomlin, not Tomlin?
It's Tomlin, yeah. Yeah, I've been told it's Tomlin, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Tomlin.
I'll try not to mess that up.
Someone even sent it to me phonetically. The T-O-E hyphen M-I-N, yeah.
They sent it to the guy who pays attention to details. I got no such email.
It was the day he got hired. I'm like, hey, I need to know how to pronounce his name just so I don't get off on the wrong foot.
We don't need to send this email to Seth so he reads it 3 weeks from now and doesn't mess up Mike Toman's name.
Walking around the
three
halls
weeks
in
from
May,
now.
Just saying his name for the hell of it.
Toman, did you know it's pronounced Toman?
That's right, that's right. So that'll be at 8 o'clock today, so we're looking forward to that. We got a lot to get into with the new Texans president. Last night, we were talking, Seth, yesterday, how the Rockets are going to be operating with a skeleton crew in all likelihood. Last night, they had a bunch of guys that were just listed as questionable. And if you're looking at discretion being the better part of valor in the whole thing, it's like, all right, well, this is a game that even with the full complement of players, the Rockets are going to be underdogs in. You got Indiana coming up on Tuesday. That feels like a more winnable game. Why not shove our chips into the middle of the table in Indianapolis? But the fellas fought last night,
They did. They jumped out to a lead. Hey, and Udoka, in a very non-Udoka-like statement, said, "Hey, we're just going to go out and have fun tonight." like he's a JV basketball coach of a bad team or something. Hey, fellas, just go out there and have fun.
And they
got nothing to lose.
And they did for a while. They were they were trailing by one at the half. It was a close game. It was a close game, and oddly enough, like the only star player out on the floor was Jalen Green, or anything resembling a star on the floor.
For the Rockets.
OKC had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Definitely looked like a star last night.
Did he score 50 or 79 points? What was it?
51 okay. That felt like 100. It was because he kept hitting shots at every point in the game where it's like where you get a little bit of hope. Like he was dashing the Rockets' hope repeatedly with that fadeaway jumper all game long. But, yeah, they were doing it, man. Aaron Holiday coming in and chucking threes off the bench, and Jabari Smith was having a good game. And even in the fourth quarter, like in the third quarter, it was close early in the second half, and then the OKC had a run that you were expecting to have happen at some point. They went on like a 10-0 run. They built a 13-point lead about 4 or 5 minutes into the third quarter. And that's when I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to bed. This one's over now. So I'm in bed, and I'm just kind of like scrolling through some things. And I get the end of the third quarter notification. I'm like, hey, but this thing's still close. Yeah. And they were down six with about 5 minutes to go. And I turned it on, and OKC goes on an 8-0 run, and I felt partially responsible for that. I say all this to say, good job Rockets battling last night with a really, honestly, literally, a partial G League crew out there.
Yeah, and it was, you understand why they had that strategy, obviously, as you laid out. It would have been nice to pull off it would have been the miracle on hardwood. That's what it would have been known for forevermore. The miracle on hardwood.
It would have been. Dude, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is so good. God, he's good. That was the Paul George. They got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a bunch of first-round picks for Paul George.
The one thing that, as much as the NBA has gotten a lot of criticism as of late and recently because of TV ratings and whatnot, mm-hmm. I do like the fact that, much like the NFL, it's not like baseball where you feel like the market size really matters. No. It's that, you know, certainly, obviously, the Lakers have a certain appeal, and there's other franchises that have either kind of geographic advantages or legacy advantages, but for the most part, it's as equal as you could hope to get.
Yeah, the leading teams in each conference are Cleveland and OKC right now. Now, that said, as we sit here and say how great that is, we have to put our money where our mouth is and actually watch the NBA Finals with Cleveland and OKC come June.
I'm all big talk right now. A few months from now, it's like, this is why the NBA sucks.
Right.
You suck, that's NBA.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just saying, like, if we're going to say it's great, then we...
Let me put it this way. If you're a genuine NBA fan, it's great for that reason. Yeah. In baseball, it just feels like you're constantly fighting on a slanted field uphill against the huge money teams.
Yes. Because that's what we're headed towards, man. Cleveland is up by 7.5 games in the East over everybody. And OKC is up by double digits in the West. They're up by 11 games over the suddenly resurgent Lakers and Nuggets. Should we be recalibrating our expectations for the Rockets come postseason and everything else?
No, I think even when things were going really well for them, there were a lot of questions and unknowns because they were still a young team. They hadn't faced teams that were really putting out necessarily early in the NBA season. They also didn't have the pressure of teams knowing that they were going to be better than they are. I always felt like, hey, this is a team that can make the playoffs. That's ahead of schedule. And then they might be scrappy in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I still think that, yes, they could be scrappy in the playoffs, but they've never once this entire season felt like a team that could really make a push for the championship.
No, even when things were good and they were the 2 seed, and they were a pretty clear 2 seed at one point, they were up by a few games in the 2 seed. Now, just to contextualize it, they're the 5 seed right now. They're a game back of Memphis for the 4 seed. Now, they're 4 games ahead of Golden State, so there are partitions going on right now. OKC is ahead of everybody by a mile. They're going to be the 1 seed.
Then they're 4 games ahead of Golden State as Steph Curry is starting to look like vintage Steph Curry is the only problem.
And Golden State's going to try to stay out of that play-in 7 through 10. Golden State has something to play for here. The Lakers, Nuggets, Grizzlies, Rockets are all within 2 games of each other in that order. So right now, if the season were to end today and the playoffs were to start, the Rockets would be facing the Grizzlies in the first round in a series where they would go on the road to do that. My hope my expectation maybe even when they were the two seed was, all right, I think it's reasonable to expect them to get home court in the first round of the playoffs, which would be a 1-4 seed. I mean, they're only a game back. It still could obviously happen. It does feel like injuries are catching up with them a little bit. The league is catching up with them a little bit. They are, other than Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and Steven Adams, they are out over their skis in terms of experience right now in March and April in this type of stuff. My NBA finals for them this year would be like if you win a playoff series. If they win a playoff series, I'll be thrilled. Win a playoff series and then don't go down, you know, with just a glass chin in the second round. You know what I
right,
mean?
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. Put up a fight.
Put up a fight. Yeah.
Put up a fight. The scrappiness and the tenacity that we saw early in the season, you just want to see that more consistently. So if you're in a playoff series and that's all you have to focus on, and some of the young guys aren't necessarily still looking at times like they're just disoriented about what it's like to play competitive basketball.
Yes.
Look, they've played entire seasons before, but they haven't played competitive basketball
season.
And it's a much more grueling affair when you're playing competitive basketball.
How excited were you to see Reed Sheppard last night get 23 in a starting role? I was. So as a texter, I still think Reed can be a star, someone texts in.
Fun. And I think that's... No, and again, we've gone through this with Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün and the whole lot of them. Cam Hayward still. Is that they're young guys.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound super, super soft or anything. I just acknowledge the reality of the situation is that, not every guy that comes into the NBA takes the league by storm his rookie year, even in his first 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
And there's some time for development.
Yeah, so Rockets back at it tonight, and another back-to-back. This is like their fifth or sixth back-to-back in the last month and a half. It's wild. But they play the Pacers tonight. So I'm expecting they'll have mostly their full complement of players. Sounds like Fred VanVleet is going to be day-to-day, game-to-game kind of thing. This doesn't...
Did I say Cam Hayward again? I'm sorry. Cam Whitmore. What the hell is wrong with me?
I didn't hear you
me?
Say it. Yeah, yeah.
I said Cam Hayward. I can't get defensive linemen out of my brain. I apologize.
It's a fetish. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We're off and running on a Tuesday. Damn it. So close.
It's my fault. I'm a bad influence.
So close. We got Cam Hayward coming on the show later on today. I'm sorry, Mike Toman.
I'm like a bad influence in the offensive line meeting room. You can't expect the young guys, your young Pendergasts, to rise up to their true potential when they've got guys like me setting a poor example.
Like Seth in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's all good. It's part of the charm of the show, I think, is what I'm told. All right, you can text in.
This is what I'm told.
Some people
giving backhanded compliments.
Seth and I feel like idiots for 4 hours. They're like, no, it's what we love about the show.
You know, the appeal that you guys have is that you're so incredibly unprofessional. Really refreshing.
Yeah. We love that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm smarter than you, and that makes me feel good about myself.
You don't hear that a lot on the radio. Yeah, exactly. Those people are employed. Right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you, 713-572-4610. That's the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. All right, we got a lot of stuff to get to today, man. We still got leftovers from the combine that we need to get to. We've got, the Astros yesterday, it continues. And by it is a good thing. It continues, but it's also started a little bit of a dust-up on social media that popped up on my timeline this morning. The Cam Smith situation. We'll get into that. And Travis Hunter, soon to be top five pick, had a polarizing comment about the difficulty of what he does. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Cam Smith did it again yesterday. Didn't hit it out of the ballpark. But if you saw the video online, and that's where you'd need to find it, because very few of these Astros games are on TV during spring training. That may show up in the Pettycast later. But at any rate,
is it that hard? You got to show up for a few games.
They're all there. Like, I'm listening on the radio, and Todd Kallas is on the radio. I'm like, he's out there. Just turn the cameras on. Jeez.
Just stream it. Stream this. Yeah,
something. At any rate... the video, when big things happen, the video does show up online. And Cam Smith, if you missed it yesterday, he's just having a phenomenal spring. And he hit a triple off the top of the wall to clear the bases. Astros were trailing the Marlins 3-1 fairly late in the game. and three-run triple, and they go on to win 5-3. And I was listening to that while I was walking yesterday, Seth, and I'm thinking, man, what would Cam Smith have to do to actually make the team out of spring training?
To make the team day one.
To make the team day one, you know, because we know Dana Brown is more aggressive than some GMs in bringing up, in using young players. They've got solutions, not great ones in some of the positions, but they've got an opening day lineup kind of penciled in already. I think it would take major, major underperformance for them to stray away from that, and I definitely don't think they want to bring Cam Smith up to be a reserve. Like, when he comes up, he's the guy. So I tend to think there's zero chance of him making the team out of spring training, yet he's doing about as good a job as you can putting a bid together right now.
I mean, he had 5 games in Double-A last year.
Right.
And now this is spring training where, at times, you're going against Single-A, Double-A, Triple-A guys. So I would be surprised if only because they're going to want to get an extra year of service time.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
No matter how good he is in spring training, A, he still has had very little time playing professional baseball at all. And B, there's no hurry right now.
Yeah.
Now, if Chaz McCormick starts off the season in right field batting 57.057 for the first 3 weeks or something, maybe then they'll think about bringing him in and moving him to right field.
Especially
or something.
Especially if he's hitting. Like, remember when Yordan was just crushing the ball back in 2019 in the minor leagues? Like, you got to bring this guy up. So he's batting 380. You got to bring him up.
I mean, and we're not just biased because he's looking good in spring training right now. Everybody in the organization just gushes about him. Yeah. They love him. And if you're on a team right now that doesn't have a pressing need for him to advance him through the ranks, given the position that he plays, there's no way, the only way is if the Astros get off their horrendous start and there's multiple injuries and everything, but you got to get that extra year of service time out of him at the very least. So I'd be surprised if until a couple of whatever the date is this year, they wait until after that. I would be surprised if they don't wait until after that.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Cam Smith won't be a day one. July, August call up to preserve his, they call it rookie salary cap for another year.
Yeah.
Conflating things a little bit. But team control is...
So for those of you who don't know, they can push free agency back one more year.
Yeah. Bring him up in July. Sometime during the middle of the summer.
It's the old George Springer thing.
Yeah,
it used to be frowned upon around the league, and now it's the standard operating procedure.
So Michael Schwab, who does he covers the Astros, he says if top prospect Cam Smith keeps hitting like this, he's making the opening day roster, and he's probably starting. He's about 30 to 40. This is a hot take. He needs about 30 or 40 more at-bats this spring before we can know for sure. But I haven't seen a hitting prospect this special since Yordan. I agree with that last part. I mean, it's very small sample size, but I agree with that last part. I tend to agree with Adam Spolane, Seth, who quote tweeted Schwab and said, "There is no chance Cam Smith is on the opening day roster in 2025. None, zero." I tend to agree. I like the work Schwab does. I agree with him. I disagree with him on this take.
I want to see how much time Yordan spent in the minors before he got called up. It was 2013 through. Did he ever play with LA in the majors?
No.
Through 2019.
Yeah.
So if you make the Yordan comp, then this would be vastly accelerated.
Yeah. Cam's 22, and Yordan was probably a teenager when he got signed. But Cam needs more seasoning, even with all this, even with all the hitting that he's doing, for sure. So the Astros win yesterday, and Cam Smith has a bases-clearing triple. Travis Hunter, shifting gears. NFL Combine is over. We got a lot of leftovers from the Combine that we'll get to on the show. Again, Mike Thoman, the new president of the Texans, will join us in studio at 8 o'clock today. Travis Hunter, who is a rarity, a true two-way player in college football, like playing 120 snaps a game, plays full-time wide receiver at Colorado, full-time wide receiver at Colorado, full-time cornerback, and both at a very high level. That's why he's forecasted to not make it past the 5th pick in the draft. He was asked whose job is harder. Basically, Shohei Ohtani, we know, can pitch and hit and do it at an elite level, just like Travis Hunter does both of his things at a pretty high level as well. What's harder, what Shohei does or what Travis Hunter does? Here's Travis Hunter.
Probably me, what I do in football, because it's a lot on your body. You know, Ohtani, he's a great player, but you got to do a lot in football.
Okay. Yeah. So that 7 seconds got all kinds of run over the last
Oh, yeah. That got a whole lot of like, hey, do you actually know how hard it is to hit a baseball or to be a pitcher and all of that? And that was my first initial reaction. And yet, there's the physical demand of it is the thing that would make it, I would say, equally as hard if he actually did in the NFL what he did in college, which I think there's almost zero chance that they ask him to do. Just by way of illustration, he played 113 snaps per game this year. The average NFL number of snaps on offense or defense in a game is 63. So wow. He played almost twice the number of snaps that you're going to play in the NFL. The big difference is he's only done it in the minor leagues so far.
Hasn't
done it. Shohei has done it in the major leagues, and he's done it spectacularly. So I got more offended by the present tense part of it. Like, what I'm doing is harder than what Shohei Ohtani did. Nah, you've been doing it in the minors. If you actually did it in the NFL, then we can talk, but I don't think there's a chance in hell that a team uses him that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such apples and oranges, too. Like, you're talking about, on one side, you're talking about super fine motor skills, like the finest of motor skills to go along with athleticism. On the other side, you're talking about the ability to withstand pain along with athleticism.
The ability to withstand pain, but also it's really, really hard to be a part-time player on defense as a defensive back. You need to get into the flow of the game. You need to start to feel and see formations and tendencies and everything. So if they're going to use them liberally on both sides, and I don't think there's a team out there, even if they have designs on using them a lot on both sides of the ball, I don't think there's a team out there that has a single notion that they're going to play them both ways all the time.
No.
At any point in his career.
I think the ceiling, and I said this a couple weeks ago, I said, well, probably during the combine last week, I think the ceiling for him is he's an elite defensive back, like an elite cornerback ceiling. And they have a package for him on offense.
Yeah,
you know they've got 8 to 10 plays in the playbook, and he gets on the field for 2 or 3 of them a game. That kind
right.
of thing.
It's a Travis Hunter package.
Yeah,
it's on goal line or it's wherever it might be that's manageable. I think that's something you could probably see by the end of his first year. It seems like, based on the scuttlebutt coming out of the combine, that most teams are looking at him as a defensive back. Mm-hmm. There are some teams that are looking more of it as primarily a receiver. I'll credit him for being open to anything, because the top paid wide receivers make about $10 million more per year on average than the top paid defensive backs.
They do. I think it's easier to get paid, though, as a top flight corner on a bad team than it is a top flight wide receiver. He's going to get drafted to a bad team.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right? Like, Cleveland is one of the, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Seth, I think Cleveland is one of the teams that's talking about him more as a receiver than a cornerback.
Yeah.
You got to wait. Like, the good receivers on bad teams are agitating for trades, like Garrett Wilson. The good corners on bad teams, you don't hear a peep from them.
You know what? Cornerback might be one of the few positions in sports where it's almost better when you're on a bad team, because you get targeted less.
Yeah.
Like, you actually, if you're on a bad defense, then they're going to attack everywhere except you if you're a good player. So it doesn't show. So you don't get the interceptions and everything, but the film looks pretty good. Your average percentage, the number of times targeted and everything, you can build a reputation as a really good cornerback whether it's a great team or a bad team.
You build a rep as a barroom brawler without ever having to get into a fight. is what you do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we don't attack. We're not attacking Stingley. No way, man. You know, I'm talking back when
the Texans
were bad.
That's a really good point, Sean.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'm going to write that down in the Google Doc of good points
good
made by
points,
Sean. It's
you.
Long. It's a long one.
I appreciate
it. Takes
that.
A long time to load.
I appreciate that. I bring that up if that's his goal. Like, most of these guys, their goal is to get to the second contract and get paid. You know, like, that's why I bring that up.
I'm literally creating the Google Doc of good Sean points right now.
It's about time.
I want to be able to go back to it, and there's those times when I hate you. Just remind myself.
Remember on March 4th? March 4th, he did have a good Travis Hunter point. That's funny.
Brandy, I'm going to send it to Brandy.
She can track it. Yeah. The texter raises the point I think you were making. Hunter would have to memorize two playbooks. Yeah. Like it's easier. One playbook and like 10 plays.
And that's why I would say that the thing that he has not actually done yet, but playing every snap on both sides of the ball in the NFL, I think that would be, and doing it well, that's the other key, that he'd have to be an all-star in both capacities. That would be equally as difficult and as impressive. And in the modern NFL, nobody's done it ever. Yes, guys used to play both ways all the time, but that was back when everybody was playing both ways.
Yeah.
So the standards weren't as high. That would be equally as impressive, but I don't think there's a chance in hell that he ends up doing it. So Shohei Ohtani is still he still has the lead on all of that.
I agree with all that. Now, that said, would you be cool with Stingley doing something like Stingley definitely has the physical tools to do what we're talking about, and the ball skills in the hands to do what we're talking about with Travis Hunter.
I feel like he would almost be like a miniature version of DeAndre Hopkins, in that he could make mediocre quarterbacks look better than they are because of his ball skills.
Contested catches, I do.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where on the goal line. He doesn't have the ideal height, you know, by the playbook to be your goal line guy, but I feel like by virtue of of springing it and having it a surprise element on the against the defense, he should be used on the goal line.
Yeah. I wonder if Nick Caley will agitate for that. I wonder if that was part of the deal coming here. I'll come here. I'll be your OC. I need 8 snaps out of Stingley.
Two things that I need. I need your assistant offensive line coach to be the offensive line coach, and I need Derek Stingley.
Sting, yes, yes. Chad Ochocinco says that these are the two hardest things to do.
The two most difficult things in life are hitting the baseball and keeping a woman happy long term. The two most difficult things in life. You hear me? Very.
Very. Tacks on a very at the end.
I was trying to figure out how to take that take. Is that Chad Johnson saying that women in general are hard to please, or that it's a hard job just as a man to sustain a good and healthy relationship?
I'd say both.
Because of our demons.
Yeah. I would say probably a little of both.
I'd say the way he phrased it, that was a little bit of like, them hoes.
Yeah, I think it was too. I'm trying to cut him a little bit of slack, but I think you're right.
Like,
I think
there's this whole culture on TikTok now where these young men are being they're being fed this propaganda that women are the problem, not you.
Oh, really?
These hoes don't know. Oh yeah, it's really toxic.
That's healthy.
It's really toxic. Yeah. I'm gonna go back to doing exercises to increase my jawline. Not that it matters, because these women, it's their fault that I'm lonely and angry all the time.
Yeah. Spend more time on TikTok, man. I gotta see these videos you're talking about.
You gotta start mewing. Yeah. That's what I learned yesterday in an article in Men's Health. Men's Health, which, by the way, is turned into... this is how bad it is. Because young guys don't read magazines, obviously.
Right.
So I like to get, it's the one periodical that I get in paper form still. Because I like it for motivational purposes. It's good to just kind of leaf through and be like, oh, here's a health tip I'll try out.
Yeah, yeah.
But Brandy doesn't pay attention to me in general, just, you know, very casually. So the other day, she said, hey, I put your old guy's catalog in the next to your bed. I'm like, old guy's catalog? She thought that it was a catalog. You know, like for almost like the what are some of those stores that the older women go to? The equivalent of that. You know, the stores that at the mall that we were like, oh, that's a big frilly flowery thing. That's about Liz Bryant or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She thought it was an old guy's catalog. I'll have you know, that is a cutting edge health magazine.
Cutting edge health magazine, so you can be a better version of yourself for her.
So anyway, they were talking about these young men and how they're all into doing these exercises to give yourself a more prominent and masculine jawline.
Oh, really? Oh.
And I thought, that's ridiculous. Let me try 7 of these exercises right now. I'll be chewing gum between breaks right now.
Well,
extra hard gum, though.
Don't you get... Right. Yeah, get that muscle buildup. Yeah, I mean, if you get rid of a double chin, doesn't that by definition give you a squarer jaw?
Well, no, it's also about the geometry of the way your mouth cavity and everything is shaped and your jaw fits together.
Yeah.
It's... It's a long shot. I'm going to be, the long story short, I'm going to be devastatingly handsome 2 months from now.
I feel like your head is shaped the right way to do that. My head's a little rounder than yours. You've got kind of a longer face.
But it's all about what you do with what you got.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean. Just saying, we're going to be mewing champions.
You've got the frame for it, is what I'm saying. You've got the frame for a squarer jaw.
Hey, what was the good point that you made 3 minutes ago?
It was the one about Travis Hunter will get paid as a cornerback, has a better chance of getting a big second contract as a corner.
Okay. Even though the apex of what you get paid isn't as high for defensive backs as it is for wide receivers, it's more achievable whether you're on a good team or bad.
It's less risky. Like, you got a better chance of getting a top of market contract at corner on a bad team than you do a top of market contract as a wide receiver.
Wow.
You're more QB dependent, you know, that kind of thing. All right. Are you jotting that down in the new document that you have?
DBs have a better chance of performing well on a bad team.
See how that ages.
Than wide receivers do.
Travis Hunter's going to go out and get 1,700 yards with five quarterbacks on the Browns, and he's going to get $42 million a year
well,
3 years from
now. Some guys, like DeAndre Hopkins, made his reputation that way. He was the QB proof. I called him the skeleton key for quarterbacks.
He did. I don't know that Hunter's built the same way, but Hopkins, Hopkins just, he's just freaky with all the contested catches and everything, you know? All right.
Catch radius.
Catch radius.
Catch radius and mewing. That's what you got to focus on.
Two big things. All right, let's get to headlines. Astros, another big day for Cam Smith. Rockets, good job, good effort. No win, but a good effort. Cougs last night, thumbs up on that. We've got a couple NFL nuggets that we'll get to. That's all in headlines coming up next.
And Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the we'll start with the Rockets. They lose last night to the Oklahoma City Thunder, 137-128. That's what happens when you trot out a starting lineup of Jalen Green, Reed Sheppard, Cam Whitmore, Jabari Smith Jr., and Jock Landale. Jock Landale, you're starting big in there.
I've been agitating for this lineup all season long, and I feel like I've been redeemed. My most unpopular take. Why has Jock Landale been relegated to his role? And yet they ambushed the Oklahoma City a little bit.
For half.
And got off to an immediate lead. Yeah. Well, they were scrappy in the second half as well.
Yep.
But this was as laid back as you've ever seen Udoka about an NBA basketball game, I think.
He knew the deal.
He flat out said, hey, I just told the guys we're going to go out there and have some fun. So they did. They went out and had some fun.
They did. They have Indiana tonight. I'm guessing it'll be a more a deeper lineup tonight against Indiana, against the Pacers tonight for the Rockets. Meanwhile, the Astros, they win 5-3 yesterday over the Miami Marlins. The big story.
How's that taste, Marlins?
Yeah, take that. The big story in this one, Cam Smith, again, with another big hit, a three-run, a bases-clearing triple that was about yay inches away from being a grand slam. He hit right off the top of the wall in center field.
I was trying
to
figure out, I don't know who the center fielder was there. I couldn't see on my grainy internet footage, but it was interesting because the guy had no idea where the wall was. It was definitely one of those old, man, the guy's not familiar with his ballpark.
Yeah.
So I wonder if a better center fielder could have made a play on that.
Probably.
I don't know if he could have gotten to it or not. So, like, a better center. But it was impressive. It was an impressive hit, nonetheless.
Yeah, it was well struck. I mean, straightaway center field, a few inches away from a home run. And Cam Smith just keeps getting it done, man. He's got an OPS of 1,714 right now. 1714
Jordan territory. Yeah, for stretches, obviously not for his career.
Yeah.
I know some people have started to wonder whether Cam Smith might be on the opening day roster. Mm-hmm. I would put the chances of that at 1%.
Yeah, 1%.
Maybe less. Yeah,
I'm with you on that. That sounds about right. That might sound aggressive. 1%. So Astros win yesterday. Wisniewski. If we're looking for other little positives from the game, Framber didn't. We didn't get to see the game. It wasn't on TV. Framber's box score wasn't great, I guess. Wisniewski, who is penciled in as the fifth starter, had another three strikeout performance over two innings like he did when we were there last week, Seth. So that was good to see for the back end of the rotation. Cougs win last night. They beat Kansas 65-59. Regular season is now over. We get ready for tournament time, so that'll be great. LJ Cryer with 22 points for the Cougs last night. Franchise tag deadline is today. This has been one of the lamer franchise tag seasons that we've had in recent memory. T. Higgins got his officially yesterday. We knew that was coming. Trey Smith, O-lineman for the Chiefs, got his last week, which is a big one because they group all the O-linemen together And so he's on a $24 million franchise tag as a guard right now. It's the average of the top five salaries at each position. And then it's expected that the Cowboys are going to tag, or if they haven't already, they will tag today, Osa Odighizuwa, their defensive tackle.
I think that, you know, Trey Smith, I know I had talked a lot about him, especially immediately after the season. It, even though Trey Smith, the guard, didn't play all that great during the playoffs, he's been a very, very good guard for multiple years now. And he was the apple of my eye. But when I started to look at the potential free agents that are available as guards, many of whom I don't think are going to, certainly not going to get franchise tagged or retained. Mm-hmm. There are enough guys that I would feel really good about that I stopped pining for Trey Smith before he was franchise tagged, because I don't think that paying top of the market for the best guard on the market, that's not something that's necessary to have a good and competent offensive line. So there's guys out there that I would be very happy with if the Texans sign. I think the big thing would be, I think we might get a little bit of a window into perhaps the way Nick Caley wants to operate, depending on whether he gets a smaller, lighter guy that could be in a good in a zone scheme or very, very versatile, or if he just goes and gets a big hoss like Mekhi Becton or something, mm-hmm. who's 360 pounds. And they, well, up in Philadelphia, they run a lot of zone as well, but it's, I'm getting all worked up over a big fatty, Sean.
Yeah, well,
I want a big old hoss.
Save that energy. We got the free agent. I got the top guys at each position coming up in the next segment here. So keep your fatty fetish going here for another few minutes. We'll do that at 7 o'clock for sure. So that's it looks like only three franchise tags are going to get doled out here. And then Seth, this time next week, if this year is anything like last year, this time next week, you and I will be coming in to a slew of texts and probably a few coworkers that are really angry with the Texans for not making big, bold moves in free agency.
That was the most stressful 24 hours of my life.
Monday of next week, Monday at noon, begins the illegal tampering period, and that's when the deals start getting publicized.
And last year, you and I had the very, very contrarian and unpopular take that, hey,
it's a wait a day.
Yeah, the first day of free agency isn't typically when teams win free agency. And people at the station hated us for it.
People
outside the station hated us for it. People wanted Nick Caserio fired. If this sitting on their hands continues, Nick Caserio's got to go.
And
the Texans ended up being one of the most active and aggressive teams in free agency.
And I thought had one of the best off seasons. I thought most of the moves... Because keep in mind, that wasn't when the Diggs trade was made. You know, the Diggs trade now is somewhat polarizing because of how it ended for Stephon with the injury. But the moves that were made in that window of mid-March, that Monday through Wednesday period, you know, you had Azeez Alshire, who I think when he was on the field played well for the Texans. Danielle Hunter was the big one. Danico Autry, okay, that one we can debate and discuss. But I think even some of the one-year guys, Mario Edwards and Tim Settle and guys like that, like I thought, you know, by and large, the moves were pretty good.
Well, Danico Autry, when he was healthy, did good things.
Yeah.
But he also gave the Texans a little bit of a break by donating back six games of salary by way of a suspension, you know?
That's right.
So that didn't end up being as big a penalty or a potentially errant free agency signing as it might have been.
The guy's practically a philanthropist. He donated money back to the McNairs.
I'm going to start pushing for guys if they're free agents and they get off to a slow start, just to go ahead and take a PED. Because, hey, maybe you get away with it and you end up playing well. And if not, we get a discount.
Good call, Seth.
And the money goes to the retired players fund.
Ah, now we know what the
full disclosure. I'm in it for me.
That's right. Jimmy Johnson retiring from Fox, from broadcasting. I'll miss Jimmy Johnson.
What a lazy bum.
I hated Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson might have been my most hated sports figure in the late 80s.
Oh, in the late 80s. I'm joking about him being a lazy bum. He's 82, everybody.
Yeah. He
thought about retiring a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was your most hated fan because of Miami, not Dallas.
Miami, yeah. He was my most hated sports figure from like 86 till he went to the Cowboys. Then I wasn't all that crazy about him either, but he was out of my life college-wise at that point.
He's the one guy that it never bothered me that he was just up there and not necessarily fully clued in on everything, yeah, but was just up there on one of those pregame shows, mm-hmm, because of his name. And largely it's because of his charisma. He's going to weigh in on big topics. It's not like he was breaking little details down or anything, but he's got that charisma about him, and I enjoyed watching him.
He's one of the few that they can ask to give the forced pep talk on these shows to a team.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. You know, like, yeah, a lot of times you go like, hey, man, what would a pep talk sound like to this team going into this playoff game or whatever? And you're like, all right, let's go. Let's get this over with here. Jimmy Johnson's were always pretty good, I thought. I thought Jimmy Johnson's pep talks were pretty solid.
So he's 82 years old. He had to travel cross country every weekend,
yeah,
from the Keys to, yep, LA.
Yeah.
I got to imagine, even though I'm guessing it was on a private jet, that's to be pretty cool.
A lot of time zone change, you know?
Yeah.
That's tough. That's really tough.
He said he thought about it a couple years ago, was kind of semi-retired and then came back in. So it's been a few years he's been thinking about it.
You know who I hope they replace him with? Nobody. There's too many guys on that damn set on Fox. There's like seven, yeah, guys on there. Just,
is Gronk on Fox?
Yes.
He's on Fox.
Yeah,
right?
He's on Fox. Yeah, give Gronk more
Gronk's
airtime.
No Jimmy Johnson.
No, but I want him to get more airtime for all the wrong reasons.
I love watching Gronk work. you just see the gears turning in his head.
He's trying really hard.
I know. He's trying really, really,
yeah,
hard.
Yeah.
He's going to get it, man. He's going to get it.
Let me tell you something, baby. This is... I love Gronk. All right. Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. I mentioned it. Hey, quick reminder, too. We're giving away tickets to Journey today at the Rodeo, Friday, March 14th. I just found out today I got my tickets. Journey, live at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. That's in the 7 o'clock hour. Mike Tolman, Texans team president, going to join us in about an hour, about 8 o'clock here in studio on the show today. The Athletic has their top 10 free agents at each position. We're not going to go through every position. Noteworthy observations, especially ones that are Texans related. And is Seth going to get excited about some fatties? That is next.